Thanks for listening to Bookworm. I'll bet you'll want to listen to DNA, KCRW's podcast with Frances Anderton. She's really one of the best informed people about architecture and the face the world is putting on today. Find DNA on KCRW's iTunes page.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Well, I'm out of my head with excitement. Today, the subject is kids' books. And I have Françoise Mouly, who is the editor of Toon Books. They have begun a new imprint, Toon Graphic Books. I have Ian Falconer, who is the Lord Mayor and inventor of Olivia, the naughty little piglet whose adventures have occupied 7 full-length kid books and countless ABC kind of board books. And then I have the current crown prince of the dark novel for children. It's Neil Gaiman. The Graveyard books have appeared as graphic novels, but one of the great new Toon graphic books is his Hansel and Gretel, which is written by Neil Gaiman, illustrated by Lorenzo Mattotti. And the question is, what are kids' books now? They are not e-books, that they are not appearing as e-books, and this is allowing kids' book to be even more carefully made on better selected paper, perfect sizes for the story being told. Since you now have published around 50 books for kids, what are you seeing, Françoise?
Well, I'm actually seeing books thriving, which makes me very happy. Not in terms of numbers, because we all know that publishing is in crisis right now. But some very beautiful books for children. Kids' books are being produced. And it used to be, when you looked at artist books, it used to be in a museum or in a gallery. And now you're seeing some kids' books that are actually truly works of art and work of literature.
Well, I regard this new Hansel and Gretel as not just a kids' book, but an art book as well. Neil, would you mind describing it to us?
Of course. It's out in two different editions. One, a sort of normal size book, and one extra large, sort of a huge deluxe thing that is just an absolute delight to hold. And it consists of alternating pages. On one double page spread, you will get my text for the story of Hansel and Gretel. And you'll turn the page and you will see a double page spread by Lorenzo Mattotti. And Mattotti is a fantastic artist. Here, instead of doing the normal, incredibly colorful, beautiful stuff that people know Mattotti for, whether it's on New Yorker covers or in his comics, they are almost impressionistic, almost Jackson Pollocky, kind of almost abstract, just black ink images that, as you look at them, slowly reveal themselves to you. They give up the idea that you are in a wood, that everything is composed of shadows, that suddenly you realize that something that you thought was a meaningless shape is actually the silhouette of a woodcutter holding an axe walking away, and this shape over here is two children underneath a tree. It's a remarkable artistic achievement.
Wow. You know, Neil Gaiman is joining us from, where are you, Woodstock?
I'm in Woodstock, New York right now.
Yes. And Francoise and Ian are in the studio. Something else that links all these artists and people with me is that they all are involved with the New Yorker covers, and it is Francoise Mouly who edits the art on the covers. Ian, you've done around, what, 30?
31, 32.
Fantastic. And Neil, the artist of Hansel and Gretel, Lorenzo Mattotti, has produced covers for the New Yorker as well. It's kind of extraordinary, this meeting point, because, again, the New Yorker cover was once something that was looked at as a pleasant scenic accompaniment to a holiday or a change of season, whereas now they've become vibrant participants in the profile of the magazine. Now, Francoise, when you dare to put Hansel and Gretel out, this is dark. It's been printed in India ink, you know, to get the deep, dark color tones of this book. And it's so beautiful. And the print is beautiful, too. And the paper is beautiful. Where did you learn in the course of doing this to trust the children to like a book like this?
Well, it's a bit what Neil was saying, is that it's a partnership with a reader, and I'm just trusting what I experience when I look at the images. And in general, the way images move me, and I fall in love with the dialogues that happens between an author, either when I read a book or when I look at the narrative image and I see, I'm deciphering and decoding what the artist has put there, and I see the intelligence of the artist. And what's exciting about a book, I think a kid's book or a New Yorker cover, is the fact that you can trust your reader, whether it be a 5-year-old child or it be an adult reading the New Yorker, to get it, you know, to apply their intelligence to it. And with those images, I'd seen those images by Mattotti when I curated the show for the Metropolitan Opera on Hansel and Gretel. And I asked a number of artists like Gain Wilson and Joel Pfeiffer and Boss Chaz to do their version of Hansel and Gretel, including Lorenzo Mattotti, and he came up with those large painting in India ink. And it was so incredibly emotionally involving looking at those images. And he explains that that was what he felt when he was a kid, that he had been terrified by the story and that he needed to explore it. And that's what he was doing. He was finding his way into that fear, that forest of fear in the images.
Now, Neil, you're sort of the master of this subject. When does a story become too scary? Is there such a thing as too scary a story? And do we need to worry about scary stories?
For me, I've always pointed to Hansel and Gretel whenever I've been asked in the past about scary stories. Because I remember being 4 years old, maybe five, and sitting in the garden at my grandmother's house, listening on the radio to a retelling of Hansel and Gretel with occasional songs from the Humperdinck Opera in the background. And it was the first time I'd ever heard the story, and I just remember the shock at learning that people could get hungry enough that, on the one hand, they would abandon their children, and on the other hand, that the children, thinking that they were rescued by a sweet old lady, actually had come across somebody who was planning to eat them. it had never occurred to me before that I could be food. And I saw everything very differently after Hansel and Gretel. I looked at grown-ups with a new eye. I realized that they were not all entirely to be trusted. And that stayed in my head like a sort of like a depth charge. So as an adult now crafting tales for children, I'm very happy to craft, you know, reassuring tales. I'm happy to craft all sorts of stories. But there is something about actually being willing to say, kids understand darkness. Kids, if you've ever, anyone who's ever told children stories, just improvising and letting them, listening to what they say, it gets shocked at how incredibly bloodthirsty they are. Kids demand vengeance.
I'm talking to Neil Gaiman, to Françoise Mouly, and to Ian Falconer on the subject of kids' books. For me, I think children get along well with darkness. But my other guest, Ian Falconer, is the creator of Olivia the Pig. The subject of Olivia is misbehavior. And for me, the dangerous kids' books, the ones where I got into actual fights with my parents, were books like The Cat in the Hat, or, well, like Olivia. She misbehaves. They're Dennis the Menaces. My mother wouldn't let me watch that program on television because she thought it taught me better ways to misbehave. But tell me, Olivia, do you get complaints from parents? She really is the guardian of how to have her own way.
Complaints? No, I've never had complaints. I've had an awful lot of people say, "Oh, you've captured my daughter exactly." My son, it's exactly. But I don't think of her as quite misbehaving, but as just having this imagination that propels her forward, and she does things without quite understanding the consequences.
Well, I think that, you see, the Olivia books are about motion. When we meet her in the first book, she is looking at a Degas drawing in the museum of some ballerinas. And from that book forward, Olivia is always in movement. The exciting thing, you're holding a still page, but this young piglet is an acrobat.
I've tried to work it so that she's that many of the pages don't even have words on them. It's sort of like storyboarding for a movie or something. That the whole joke is told just visually, physically.
You were talking about Ian showing his characters in movement, and I think it's true. Even in the story by Neil, that you get a lot of sense of like what it smells like, what you see, what the touching quality of it. And I'd learned a lot from teachers and from educators, and they were talking to me about the fact that young children perceive reality in a multimodal way, not just through the content of the words, but if I am saying to a young kid, it's 4 o'clock, come and have cookies, I can say it in French because I used to speak French to my kids, and all of the friends will come over.
Say it in French, say it in French.
C'est l'heure du goûter, venez manger, venez. The kids will go wash their hands, they will do all this, even though they don't understand the content of the words, but it is the growling of their stomach, and it is the tone in my voice, and it is the fact that other people are coming, and their perception of the world is that psychologist Dr. Tversky calls it multimodal. And we, as adults who are used to reducing things to just words, are operating on one dimension, which is very thin and narrow compared to the multimodal ways that children experience things. When you start combining words and pictures, you have a much richer and more of a deeper set of dimensions.
Now, I'm fascinated by what you just said, Françoise, about the multimodal, because I have never heard that word before, honestly. But my grandmother and I used to sit all day. Her English was not good. She was from Russia. And my Yiddish or Russian was non-existent. And yet we used to sit and talk all day. What is the word again? Multimodal. Deep inside me, I knew the meaning all along. Everything was there but the literal version. The feelings were there, the pictures were there, in specific, the love was there. I know that I'm going to sound like the oldest fashioned marm, school marm, but isn't love a part of how these books work? I mean, when kids say, "I love Olivia," I think it's real love that they're talking about, and it's an introduction. When you wait to find the next Olivia book, it's like someone favorite coming to visit. You've been waiting and waiting, and here she is again, someone you love. Do you think about that kind of connection?
I suppose so. You think about it, an actor that you really, really love to watch, and you can't wait for their next film to come out, like Meryl Streep or something. You just go see anything that they're in because they're always fun to watch, always.
Yeah, I want to see Olivia in Hamlet. I mean, I really would. I would see
Joan
Olivia.
Of Arc.
Joan of Arc, absolutely.
In making books and making books for children, it's a labor of love. So that's only an expression. But it's also, when it's being read, it's on somebody's lap and being held. And the physical connection that there is with reading a book is an essential part of why kids' books form the attention that they do. I think children are formed by the books that they read when they are young. And when they're read to, I can hear when my children are reading, they're now young adults, but I can hear their father's voice in their reading. They're totally absorbed. Art read a lot of
Art Spiegelman.
Their father read in English. I read comics to them. But there is a connection that you make when you're reading with a child where you're actually inhabiting the world. And certainly with illustrated books, you are bringing an entirely like four-dimensional world to life.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from KCRW. I'm talking with Françoise Mouly, who is the editor of Toon Books, as well as the art editor of The New Yorker. And really, she has come to be so brilliant on the subject of kids' books. Ian Falconer, who's the author of the Olivia books, That Mischievous Pig, and Neil Gaiman, whose most recent project is A Hansel and Gretel with art by Lorenzo Mattotti. We'll continue after this short break.
If you're listening to Bookworm, chances are you're a big reader. Connect with other book lovers. Join our virtual book club on Facebook. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm for more info. Thanks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. And I'm talking with Françoise Mouly, Ian Falconer, and Neil Gaiman about kids' literature. Now, Neil, I'm remembering in Dickens a character who says something to the effect of, "I loves to make your skin crawl." Mm-hmm. "I loves to make your flesh creep," something like that. And I think of what you're doing, too, that there is, again, in that physical response that horror evokes, it is love.
It's true. But I think at that point, anybody who's interacted, even with the smallest baby, knows that one of the things that babies love, that small children love, is to be safely scared.
Mm.
They love to be just a little bit scared when they know that they're safe, and you do it, and then they demand that you do it again and again, because it's a way of being afraid in a safe place, in a safe context, and working through it and growing. Well, I think the important thing is that what all fiction tells us, and kids' books are a form of fiction that does this too, but all fiction tells us, is that we are not alone. We are not the only ones out there. Things have happened to other people. Fiction allows us to see the world through other people's eyes and have other people's experiences have happened to us. So yes, we get to experience all sorts of life's poisons in tiny, almost homeopathic doses. And we get to survive, we get to turn the page.
Now I want to end with a little tribute to the new Toon graphic books, because I'm very impressed with them. They include Neil Gaiman's Hansel and Gretel, but the other new Toon books, we've got Theseus and the Minotaur, which excited me as much as, well, as much as any of the great transformations of mythology that are going on in children's lit right now. Here's the original. And then the best of all, a book by a madman. I promise. This is a French writer who called himself Fred. Françoise, what was his full name?
Frédéric Othon Aristides.
He just called himself Fred. And he wrote many volumes. How many?
I think it's almost 20, yeah.
About a character named Philemon. He is a boy whose best friend is a donkey, who has a father who doesn't believe any of the stories that Philemon tells. And I have never, in a long life of reading, seen things move so quickly, so imaginatively, so crazily, moment by moment. It is a complete fantasy world that Philemon enters in this first of the translations called Cast Away on the Letter A, made available by Toon Graphics.
I grew up with Philemon. What's really rewarding for me is that I get to publish what I, as a young kid, like 10 or 11 or 12 years old in Paris, the comics that I was reading at the time. And I found out, I didn't know this at the time, but I knew it was my opening into a world because it was...
Oh, it's Alice in Wonderland.
It's Alice in Wonderland, and for me it was something I could really go back to. And every time I reread it, I would find like new wrinkles and new hidden details, and that was my first foray into like how rich comics could be, which later on became true when I discovered other work. And it turns out that his family was Greek immigrants who had settled in Paris, and his mother had grown up also from Greek parents in London. And at bedtime, she was telling him stories, and she was making up the stories based on Greek mythology, but also on Lewis Carroll and on Gulliver's Travel. And she was giving him a mishmash of all of the different story traditions that she herself had encountered. And he says he gave himself this assignment every night before going to sleep, that he would take a premise, like finding oneself on the letter of the word Atlantic Ocean. And then, as he was falling asleep, he had to tell himself a story. I am in touch with a lot of artists, and they're all storytellers. because whether it's to do books or covers for The New Yorker, they want to tell a story to somebody. And they all started out as readers, and they all giving us their version of all the stories they grew up with.
And I was so happy because I got, you know, a great big box. I read all 7 Olivia books. I got to read Neil Gaiman's new Graveyard book as a 2-volume graphic novel. I got to read all of the new Toon books, but especially the 4 new Toon graphic novels. And what a miracle that the very last thing I read was Cast Away on the Letter A by Fred, which I loved as much as I love anything. I mean, I'm always talking about love here. It's my stock in trade, for better or worse. And I've loved having you as guests. And thank you very much for joining me. I've been talking to Françoise Mouly, the editor of Toon Books, as well as the art editor of The New Yorker, and so many things as well. Thank you, Françoise.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here.
Ian Falconer, the illustrator as well as the author of the Olivia the Pig series of children's books. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you very much.
And Neil Gaiman, fiction author, graphic novelist, and children's book writer. Now his absolutely superb and beautiful telling of the Hansel and Gretel legend. What he's done is to strip away the fancy parts and leave the terror, the genuine grim terror, in this Toon graphic by Neil Gaiman and the art by Lorenzo Matotti. Thank you, Neil, for joining us from Woodstock, New York.
That was an absolute delight, Michael.
You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez, and she does the work of a real committed bookworm lover. I love her. Alan Howard is associate producer, which means that he edits the show. Never an easy job. The technical director is Mario Diaz, with a very sensitive ear. Special thanks to David Sobel, my new assistant. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when we revisit Yeon Lee.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. 2 FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.